Hi, this is Patti LuPone.
This is Allison Janney.
This is Matt Ballmer.
This is Donna Murphy.
This is Nia Vardalos.
This is Jesse Tyler Ferguson.
This is Beanie Feldstein.
I'm Octavia Spencer.
This is Ben Platt, and you're listening to Little Known Facts with my favorite person on the planet, Alana Levine.
A-OK.
Welcome to Little Known Facts, a podcast where you will hear unfiltered, raw, honest, and uniquely funny interviews with artists you love as they talk about the art they love to make. I'm your host, Ilana Levine.
You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow or find an awesome template. No judgment.
Introducing Bluehost Cloud, ultra-fast WordPress hosting with 100% uptime. Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Of course you do. And now you can have all three with Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost. With 100% uptime and incredibly speedy load times, your WordPress websites will be dependable and lightning fast on a global scale. Plus, your sites can handle even the biggest traffic spikes without going down or lagging. And with Bluehost Cloud, you get 24/7 WordPress priority support, meaning you're connected to WordPress experts anytime you need them. Not to mention, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. So, what are you waiting for? Get Bluehost Cloud today by visiting Bluehost.com. That's Bluehost.com.
Hey, I heard you needed inspiration. He's Alana and friends with some revelations. Little known fact of the day. Every little thing's gonna be A-OK.
Hey everyone, new episodes of Little Known Facts drop every Monday and you can find them on your favorite podcast provider. Also, if you go to the website, littleknownfactspodcast.com, you'll find behind-the-scenes photos, videos, and interviews and lots more on the gallery page. And if you are loving these intimate, candid conversations with all the artists who come on the show, please head over to the contributions page. I depend on these donations to continue to bring you these interviews every week. So if you love the show, please donate. Hey, everyone. I am here today with Matt Roden and Robbie Rozelle, who are my special guest as I do a little Monday morning quarterbacking about what was Broadway Con 2017. So before we begin, I just want to read quickly some highlights of these two amazing guests that I have in the booth today. And then we'll get into it. Are you guys ready?
Let's go. Ready.
All right. So Robbie Rozelle is a writer, director, and graphic designer who was one of the driving forces behind Playbill Pride and Broadway for Orlando's What the World Needs Now is Love. The former creative director of Playbill, Robbie is now the graphic designer for Broadway Records. He writes and directs cabarets regularly for Tony nominees Melissa Errico and Kate Baldwin, among others. He has been called the Diva Whisperer. He regularly tweets niche musical theater jokes at Diva Robbie. Matt Roden is an art-trepreneur, believes that art is a channel to the truth. He's a content creator. I was going to say he's a content creator.
I'm content, too. I'm both of those things. I'm content.
He's happy. A content, happy content creator, an actor, a host, a son, a brother, and a loyal Jason Mraz fan. He's the creator of the Red Carpet Challenge and the co-creator of the viral video series Broadway, which is hilarious.
Thank you very much.
The Cynthia Erivo one in particular.
Thank you.
Is one of my faves.
Me too.
So it's the day after what was one of the most extraordinary weekends of my life.
Ooh.
I've never been to Broadway Con. I mean, I know there's just two, but still, I'd never been to one, but I got to go to two. And I just have to say, to be in the bubble of Broadway joy and passion.
That's what it is, really.
So starting with you both, who were there last year in what was the inaugural Broadway Con event, what for you was different, perhaps, about this year and last year, but what made this one so special?
first of all, the weather this year. Last year was...
The weather outside was frightful.
Oh, it was,
last year.
Yeah.
We were stuck in... I almost said hurricane. We were stuck in the blizzard, Jonas. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, the
Nick
last year,
or Joe?
Kevin, Schmeppy.
Nice.
All of them.
Nice. Did you say Schmeppy? Yeah. Is that what you...
Schmeppy Jonas?
Yeah.
Is that like the little brother that's not in the band?
It's the cat.
He couldn't
cat.
Do it.
I don't
He's
know.
Like the non-talented one. So we were stuck in that, but it was also at the Midtown Hilton on two floors, and they couldn't leave. Like, nobody could leave. So we were just stuck.
Right.
All Broadway shows were canceled, so we were making up programming as it went along because... there was not enough stuff for these wonderful people to do.
And people couldn't get into the city.
Nowhere. Right.
Like, there were a lot of panels that were full of people that literally could not commute in. So we just were, like, making stuff up on the spot.
So there was a lot of improv that went on last year.
Yeah. It was very, like, homegrown. It was because it was in a hotel, and it was a little more intimate in that way. And I think, again, because we were sort of, like, flying by the seat of our pants, it was just kind of like we were all in this thing together.
Yeah.
Making it sort of happen. Everybody that was working behind the scenes, which I kind of was, and I think you kind of were too. It was cool to sort of watch the thing sort of just emerge out of this, what seemingly seemed like a terrible situation. Yeah, right. I mean, this is, musical theater major did not go to school.
Fine. There will be no math
today, perfect.
I want to say,
perfect.
Other than the second Broadway con. That's
perfect.
The end of the math for today.
No addition. Good.
No, none.
Blake Ross, the editor-in-chief, of Playbill
at the time,
ran up to me because people were canceling left and right and just screamed, "Who's in your phone that we can call?" And did like that party line that night. I was like, Laura Benanti? Patty, who do you want?
Yes, I'd like Laura Benanti and Patty LuPone. That would be great.
Because they were just
to have them like call in or can they get here?
They like party lined. With like a screen, like FaceTime.
Yeah, they did this like Blizzard hotline, which they actually did this year again, sort of as like a
throwback.
Is that when they Skyped with Lin-Manuel?
No, that was the Hamilton thing, but that was the same vein in that like they had a group of people just like sitting on stage calling everyone they had in their phone and FaceTiming them for like the entire crowd at BroadwayCon on the main stage. Chris Rodriguez did an impromptu
concert.
like a whole set. Mm-hmm. It was just.
I know Judy Kuhn and Fun Home people made it there because I remember talking to her on the phone and she's like, "There's a blizzard and I'm going to leave my house now and I really don't want to disappoint. So Michael Cerveris and I are going to somehow make our way up there." And I think they did.
Yeah.
Because she walked. I think she walked Judy Kuhn.
Pocahontas.
Right
there.
There was so much.
I mean, it was so much snow. Like, the streets were all closed. We were walking through the middle of the streets.
That's right. Like, I forgot that. Well, the weather was absolutely gorgeous.
It was gorgeous.
This weekend. Yeah. And for me, walking into the Javits Center, I've never been to Comic-Con, which I know was sort of the idea that they were going to take something like that for Broadway fans. So I didn't know what to expect. But this year, BroadwayCon was in the Javits Center, which is this huge convention center here in New York City. There was a boat show going on, a travel show. There's a lot going on at once at the Javits Center.
There's a lot there.
I actually went to that food court with Sir Robbie right here.
That's true. For well-done fries.
They were delicious. And I walk in and immediately I thought, oh my God, with all that's been going on politically in the world, to walk into a room and the first thing I see are like these two girls dressed in their Wicked costumes doing like karaoke for good. And for someone like me, that's not an unhappy moment. That's a really happy moment. And it went from there. And to kind of just walk around surrounded by all of these fans, young and old, loving just being in a room with like-minded, passionate people. And let's just go through the list for a minute of stars that I can think of off the top of my head that performed or were on panels. We already mentioned Judy Kuhn, Anthony Rapp, Carmella. She was married to Tony on The Soprano.
This is going great.
Carmella Soprano. No, how do you say her name?
Carolee Carmello.
Thank you.
Carolee. Yeah. She was there.
That redheaded
Oak from
goddess.
Hamilton. Okay.
Yeah.
Anne Harada. The entire Wicked. Anyone who's ever been in Wicked.
Wicked was there. All the people, whole cast of Bronx Tale, the whole cast of Dear Evan Hansen.
Bandstand.
Mm-hmm.
In Transit.
The cast and director of the new upcoming speech and debate film.
Oh, yeah. They did especially. Then there were panels on... B.D. Wong, among others, did a panel on Asian American actors, and there were a lot of writers and political activists talking to, this was really amazing to me, the playwright Paula Vogel, Oak from Hamilton, Tina Landau, the amazing director, Celia Keenan-Bolger, all of them sort of taking this opportunity to be in a room with thousands and thousands of fans and talking to them about all of the passion that they have for Broadway and taking all of that powerful feeling and channeling it just as effectively and passionately into some form of activism. And I thought, you know, I often am not sure, is this the place to be political? Mm-hmm. We're all here to kind of just celebrate the arts. But somehow it was done with such kind of effortlessness.
Yeah.
And it felt right. It felt right to me. What did you guys think about that?
I think art is sort of innately active in the sense that, like, it does paint a picture. It is about sort of what's going on in the world. And in a place where there are so many like-minded people that share a common passion, when someone speaks about something, that entire crowd is just, like, the most engaged. They are just, like, listening with open ears and open hearts and just, like, ready to soak in anything. I mean, yeah. I was on a panel and listen, like, I'm not fancy. Okay. I don't have any people that love me, whatever.
Well, Robbie and I love you.
I love you.
Well, I love you guys too, but it's true. But, like, you know, for fans or for anybody to hear what I say and think what I say is important and go, you've inspired me to do this. Who am I?
Well, what you're touching on right now, I have a couple of thoughts off the top of my head. One, what was so incredible is that it was an event, whether you were B.B. Newirth,
sure,
or whether you were a fan of Chicago and everything B.B. Newirth has been in, everybody was together.
Yeah.
There was no, like, security guard at the stage door making sure, like, there are very few events like that. Whatever your role is in the Broadway community, be it fan or performer, everyone was one family. And I'm not just saying that. I witnessed it and experienced it
over and over again,
where performer after performer spent a lot of time one-on-one with everyone who came up to them and was like, thank you. This is my chance to say thank you. And it was really powerful.
I think in this industry, we get the stage. We get to be in the theater with each other. We get the stage door to and have that interaction. We have the internet to have those interactions. Mm-hmm. And this is sort of the only place where fans can connect in a real, you know, real-time physical way with people that they've admired or look up to their whole lives. You know, they idolize these people. I just think it's so remarkable that
the generosity of spirit on all sides. Robbie and I were talking yesterday at BroadwayCon, you know, It is no secret that so many people who become involved in the theater community, whether it's plays, you know, straight plays or musicals, at some point in their lives, if not for most of their lives, felt like an outsider. That in their community, for whatever reason, they just didn't feel like they fit in. And when they found the theater department or community theater or wherever that was in their lives, suddenly, like, they breathed a little easier and their step was a little lighter.
That was me. That was me growing up and discovering the High School Musical that literally saved my life. And now I've spent all these years just giving back because I'm still here and alive. And I think to touch back, we as artists, we have a voice and we are given this platform, the BroadwayCon platform, or just any sort of social media platform to say what is important. And that's why I think so many of the panels turned to politics so quickly. I had a gentleman who came up to me at my booth. I was there with Broadway Records, and we did the What the World Needs Now is Love.
Seth Rudetsky was on my show, and we talked in great detail about how that came together and how powerful it was.
What an amazing day. But this, I think he was a Puerto Rican American gay man who, so like Pulse Nightclub was like a Puerto Rican gay nightclub.
Yes.
So his people, he came up to me and thanked me for my work on it and started to cry, and I started to cry. And listen, I designed it and, you know, was in the room when it happened, but I lost my mind. It was so beautiful for me and touching for me.
Well, we talk a lot about how it's incredible the community. You know, I in a way have become closer to you guys because of Twitter.
Sure.
Right? So as someone who is like completely like, I don't understand the social media, but it sure feels good to have so many friends. There's nothing that replaces human contact. You can virtually praise each other, mm-hmm. but to get to say thank you and look someone in the eye and hold their hand in your hand at the same time, which is, you know, what the Broadway for Orlando cover sort of was that you were a part of designing. Well, to that end, you know, there was a moment, there were a couple of takeaways for me. Janine Tesori, who wrote the musical Fun Home with Lisa Krohn, said to a panel, anything we do in person is a political act. Showing up is a political act. I think all of us right now feel like Horton hears a who, like we are here, we are here. How do I, in a little fluffy ball floating around in space like Whoville, feel impactful? And I think to have so many numbers of people in one room who are like, we are you. We were the outsiders. We were the misfits. We were the people who feel like we didn't have a place. We are emotional immigrants in America. If not,
wow, that's a good way of putting
it. Like, yeah, if absolutely. Not literally immigrants from other countries. I mean, the Lin-Manuels and all of these incredible voices in our theater who are either immigrants or the children of immigrants. To be together, it really was, and I say this with so much love, it was like the inmates had taken over the asylum, right? Like,
beautifully.
Like, literally, in a safe kind of padded walls of the Javits Center, we could all fly our freak flags with such joy. And I think every one of us who's in the theater shares the same quirks and passions and feelings of outsiderness that all the fans of theater feel as well.
I think that's the through line. To me, that's the key to everything in that space, because everyone who's there has this, like, we all were the weirdo. We all were that kid. And so when you meet somebody like a fan of yours, or you meet B.B. Newirth, everybody shares this just like common love for musical theater, for Broadway maybe specifically, but really I think it's just like the art form of theater. And to see people dressing up in, like, costumes and going, like, full out.
And having so much fun.
Where else could they do that?
Yeah.
Where else?
Halloween.
I guess.
365 maybe. Days a year at the Javits. Right.
Right. But, like, maybe, because the truth is, like, I don't know if those kids are going to dress up as Elphaba and Galinda for Halloween.
The boys won't, they could there.
But they
could. And that's what was really amazing. I saw the hottest male Elphaba. Oh. I was like, you know what? They should rethink. Where's Mark Platt? Can we rethink this?
Yeah.
Can we rethink this?
Yeah.
I had a really sweet thing happen. You know, also just how long-lasting things are. Like, I remember all the musicals I saw as a young person, and any interaction with somebody in that show was really moving to me. And I remember, very much led by Anthony. Anthony played Charlie Brown. Anthony Rapp played Charlie Brown in the production of You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, that I did as Lucy. That you stage doored, which is how we met.
That's true.
Originally. Yeah. And he had just done Rent right before this show and had more interaction with fans than any show in Broadway history before that, because that was the beginning of...
Yeah, that's so interesting.
Right, like really, and kind of cults growing out of the, you know, Rent heads, right? Other than Grateful Dead's Dead heads, there were suddenly these Rent fans and they had names, and the internet was active growing up at the same time as that show happened.
Yeah.
So suddenly there was a way for like-minded, obsessed fans of Rent to get to know each other and form communities, and people would sleep on the ground. You know, it's what's happening now, right? Yeah.
The Nederlander has no stage door, so the cast would go in and out the same doors as the audience. So
they had where Rent was, the original Rent.
Yes, yes. Yeah. So they were almost forced to interact. Not that they didn't want to, but that was
it was organic.
Yeah.
And then that cast really
took to it.
Emotionally was comfortable with that, and Jonathan Larson would have wanted that. So it was this whole movement.
Yeah.
I only bring all of this up because, sadly, I wasn't in Rent, although I thought I was because I saw it as much as anyone on the planet. But Anthony was really a leader for me in terms of, I had done many plays on Broadway, but I'd never been in a musical. Mm. And it's a very different kind of fan base.
Yeah. Different
and it's
animal.
A much more passionate, unbridled, no, it's like the Wild West out there when you come out your stage door. The enthusiasm is intoxicating, but it's overwhelming too.
Yeah, it
and,
can be.
And it's really hard doing 8 shows of a musical a week. And you kind of want to just stay in your dressing room and sleep in between the matinee and the evening show. But Anthony taught me so much about what it means to give back to your audience, because he would go out after every show and sign hundreds and hundreds of autographs. The Charlie Brown fan base was a really interesting mix of Rent fans who kind of are so loyal and went to all of that cast's next projects. And like little kids who felt like, I felt like Nancy Kerrigan and like you know,
oh
you felt
God,
like an ice,
yeah.
right? Like they were really young and just looking at you and their moms would be like, she's a Lucy. Ooh. As if it were like, not an, I was like, you mean she has an opinion?
Right.
And is a feminist? Good for you, Gloria. Good.
Right.
So that was the beginning, right?
But there's no, that's no surprise to me. That Anthony was...
And then he started Broadway Con.
He started Broadway
Con. That's my whole point. Sorry, that took me 20 minutes to say that. And he's everywhere at Broadway Con.
Everywhere.
He's literally
it's his baby.
Like, it's his baby, but he's sweeping up if something spills and he's taking, he's signing autographs and he's like running around making sure everybody's okay. And, you know, then you hear the soundtrack of Rent going on somewhere and you're like, that's what? That's him?
Oh, it's crazy.
That's Mark Cohen. That's Mark Cohen.
Yeah.
But also, this woman found me at Broadway Con yesterday with a playbill from Charlie Brown that had my entire cast's autographs on. And I was like, oh, my God, that's so sweet. She's like, I've been waiting to find you for 15 years because you were the only one I didn't get that day. My mom made me leave and we'd had everyone and I couldn't get you. Could you sign it now? And here I am with this woman who clearly was 8 at the time and now she's a grown up. And I thought, yes. Yes, I'm happy to sign. And I also felt like, so what have you been doing? Like, what's been happening for the last 15 years? It was just this very powerful, sweet thing because I got it. Like, she had had an experience and it wasn't quite finished yet. She needed, like, the dot, at the period at the end of
it's
the sentence.
You were that period. That's
I
beautiful.
Was her period.
Okay. Let's all calm down.
She got her period.
She got her period.
At Broadway Con, and I gave her something.
You close her with that. No, I think what you said about social media is just so, I mean, it's just the most true that like those communities, I mean, Broadway Con and any of the cons, they've only been able to happen because of social, because of these online communities that have been able to form. I mean, it's called conference, but also it could be Broadway Com for community, but conference, because that's where people came together over like common ideas. And again, with the stage door idea that like, you know, there are people on Twitter that we can, you know, you and I can have a relationship on Twitter and we can interact that way.
And my husband doesn't mind because it's on Twitter.
Right. It's fine.
We can have a relationship.
You know, and this is the other thing I tell people on social media all the time. Social media was never meant to replace human interaction. It was meant as a catalyst. So the whole purpose was to create human connection so that it would lead to these types of conversations, me sitting with you here now.
And so many of the people who came to Broadway Con were friends who had met online.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And for the first time, I watched reunion after reunion happen between these groups of people.
I had fans that I've never met before that like everything I post, share everything I post. And the girl came up to me and she was like, I'm Allie. And I was like, oh my God, you're Allie.
Yeah.
And I was so excited to see her and she was excited. It was, but it's just those like beautiful, wonderful moments where you can say thank you. And so it, I just, I love it.
I
love
do too. And all of the performers did multiple panels and autograph signings and picture booths. Like these actors, no one, just so my listeners know, none of the talent that performs at Broadway Con gets paid. It's a true labor of love.
Yeah.
It's a true wanting to say thank you and meet the people who are responsible for their careers, having longevity. And at one point I did a panel with Judy Kuhn and there was this guy there who was really, like, of all the things that we were talking about, he kept going back to Pocahontas. That had meant so much to him.
Yeah.
And he told a personal story about why. And all of a sudden he was like, we took questions from the audience and every time we circled back to him. It was a Pocahontas-related question. And finally, at the end, he raised his hand again, and we're like, okay, what else is there going to be? We told
left?
How she got the song opportunity, what, you know, right. how they did it. How do you record a song for a soundtrack for a film? On and on and on. And he said, Judy, would you sing Colors of the Wind? And she looked at me, and I looked at her, and I was like, what, are you going to say no?
Like, right.
Like, really? And all of a sudden, like, there's Judy Kuhn, four-time Tony-nominated diva, who's on her day off, mm-hmm. basically.
Who had just come from Battery Park, where she was protesting.
She was protesting, and five other, you know, concerts. She just started, she opened her mouth, and it was literally like she'd been warming up all day, and in like the most perfect, melodic, sweet, gentle, filled the entire convention center.
Goosebumps.
Yep. And all of a sudden, like, you could hear a pin drop, and people are walking over, and everyone stops what they're doing. And it was magical.
That's iconic.
And I looked at this kid, and like, there's just tears streaming down his face. And I was like, Broadway con, drop the mic, yeah. boom.
He'll never forget that for the rest of his life.
I'll never forget it for the rest of my life.
And like, I that's what this is. Like, that's yeah. what this thing is.
Yeah.
It is full of those moments that are just like, I make my heart so, and again, like with what's going on in our world now, like we need this. And we all need this more than ever.
And what I was worried about, not to bring up Charlie Brown again, but Andrew Lippa wrote this song called Beethoven's Day, mm-hmm. where Schroeder, you know, like mm-hmm. Lucy's like, let's sell Beethoven t-shirts. And he's like, commercialize, you're commercializing, like kind of the take on yeah. Schultz's don't commercialize Christmas, don't commercialize Beethoven. So I got really nervous when I heard there was like a Broadway convention. Like, is it all going to be like vendors and this commercialized, yeah. like,
whoops.
People hawking their wares that are Broadway related or trying to sell things
not
to
yet.
Broadway
no,
fans.
Not yet.
And it wasn't.
No.
I never felt like someone was like, sign up for my sign on the, yeah. you know, dotted mm-hmm. line. Mm-hmm. Not that people weren't letting you know what was available if you love Broadway or yeah. if you want to be a singer or a performer, but it was such a celebration and a non-commercialized feeling. And that was impressive for me in a convention center.
I think what was different from this year to last year was that last year, again, we were on two floors. Mm-hmm. So that was hard where like there, I don't think there were conference rooms on the second floor. Like there, or maybe there were, I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah, there were a couple.
But there wasn't sort of this set, like the marketplace was not centralized last year. It was kind of sort of offset and it wasn't like a place that people hung out.
No.
And this year, just sort of the location of the marketplace. I mean, it was the central sort of heartbeat
yeah,
of the
hub.
Whole,
yeah,
yeah of yeah. the whole thing. And the rooms, the conference rooms were right off of the marketplace. The main stage was like down and around, like far, far, far
yeah.
away. But it was nice because there was this sort of open location in the middle of everything where that's where like everybody hung out. That's
yeah.
where everybody sort of.
Totally. That's where I bumped into so many friends I hadn't seen. But what's going on in all those rooms is Anthony Rapp giving a vocal masterclass or, you know, some major Broadway choreographer teaching you like the steps to Wicked mm-hmm. or how to do makeup for Wicked. All of the professionals who spend their days backstage or on stage came in and were like, you want to know how? We're going to lift the veil.
Mm-hmm.
It
yeah.
doesn't have to be a secret.
No.
We want you to know how we do this because you deserve to know. All the magicians showed you how to do their tricks.
And I said to somebody at the panel, I was like, there's no market too niche. I was like, look at where we are. I was like, there are, like you said, like the original makeup designer for Wicked probably isn't a celebrity anywhere else in the world,
yeah.
but at BroadwayCon, he
oh
is
God.
Like royalty.
Yeah, people were like pulling, he was like a Beatle coming in.
Isn't that, but like, that's amazing.
Jackie Byrne
yeah.
told this, you know, all we want to know is what, like, what went wrong. Share things that went wrong that yeah. we in the audience didn't know. And she told this hilarious story of going up in the elevated, when you're Elphaba and like the
power.
Big defying gravity
yes.
moment. And she forgot her broom on the floor of the stage. And like the whole thing is like, here's the broom. And she does a magic spell to make the broom have magical powers. And she, like, it's all about the broom. You can't fly without
the broom.
Right. Right. So she just told the most hilarious story about, like, she was, like, getting to the thing, and she straps herself in, and, you know, it's going up, and all she said, she's trying, like, if I could just get the broom off the floor. And she's up there, and she's spending the entire song, like, doing her best to make her hands look like crate, like, I'm a broom.
Oh, my God.
And also flop sweating the whole time, like, sure. I'm fired. When I come down, I'm going to be fired, because the whole show is about this broom, the whole moment. And what fans, you know, there's a lot of repeat fans who come see these shows, right? If the understudy, the standby, like both somehow got run over by a car, they could like, you and A7, can you get up here? And they'd be perfect in the show, which is like sad for us actors.
I'm off book right now.
Robbie's
so.
Ready.
Yeah.
So she just told the most hilarious story of like also flop sweating. Like I'm sure the green face was like there were like
off,
flesh
yeah.
color because she's like, I don't have the broom and I'm important, but the broom is really important. And how she came off stage and literally like no one noticed. Like she's like, okay, well, I'm sure the stage manager will call me and tell me in my dressing room, like I'm fired now. Like all day, she was like, when? Oh, I'll go home and I'll get the call that I'm fired. And it just turned out like, well, maybe she was really effective. Her hands really looked like she's amazing. But to get to hear like me, like I'm a grown-up lady who's been on Broadway, and I am the crazy, rabid 18-year-old fan who is like, oh my God, that's how they like lock themselves into the like cherry picker that takes them up into the sky. Or Anne Harada told this amazing story of like throwing up on stage. And luckily there was a bucket as a prop, but literally like all of her castmates having, it was literally a story about the show must go on is the phrase. Mm-hmm. And she was like, should it?
Like at what point? At what point do you say like I don't know?
Or like a stage manager had died while calling the show, and the show kept going. And it's interesting because we were thinking afterwards, talking about like what other business is there where on the door the plaque says the show must go on. Like if you were at let's say Google at a staff meeting, and the person presenting all the information with their cute PowerPoint presentation collapsed and died.
You would like stop.
Meeting
You'd
over.
Stop the meeting.
Yeah, you stop.
Or like your waitress suddenly like is bleeding her neck. She's going to stop taking your order. And you'd be like, you know what? It's okay. You get in an ambulance. I'm going to get my eggs Benny someplace else.
Oh my God.
But there's like, I thought that was a really good point. Mm-hmm. And at the next equity meeting, I think we should really address, should the show go on?
What's the line? No, I mean, I saw the final dress of The Encounter that just was on Broadway for a handful of weeks.
Yes, you encountered it.
Yes, I encountered it. Oh. And he cut his head open.
What?
During, I literally spit out water.
Spit take.
I am really good at spit take. Spit taking. But this was my best.
This was good. No, he literally cut his head open.
So
like
sorry.
Three quarters of the way through the show, and there's no intermission. And I thought it was part of the show. No, like didn't think anything of it.
He's a great illusionist.
I mean, yeah. Weeks later, someone was like, "Oh no! Like he had to like go to the hospital and get staples after that." But he finished the show
with like blood coming out.
Oh,
of, like,
covered. His hand was covered in blood, and I was like, "Oh, this is amazing." I was like, "This is like look at these effects."
How did they do that? Maybe at BroadwayCon they'll show us,
but. This industry and maybe sports is the only other one where they're just like, you power through.
But at least in sports, on occasion, I mean, I did see Jerry Maguire and he does like get back up, but a stretcher appears.
A stretcher comes out.
They huddle around them. Like it would have been fair if a medic had come onto the stage of The Encounter and been like, hey guys, the only time it happens, I've been in shows like a couple of times where clearly something's happening in the audience.
Oh, somewhat.
Right, and they stop and you hear someone goes, there a doctor in the house. But anyway, I think this is something to consider. When should the show not go on?
I was at a town hall for a concert 2-3 years ago, whatever, up in the balcony, and a man was having a heart attack and moaning. Mm. Howard McGillin is on stage, like powering through the music of the night as they're like taking this guy out. Howard has no idea this is happening, but the last thing this guy's hearing is like, let your mind, whatever, you're dying. Like that was the song. And I was just like, this is.
He took it really literally.
Nothing happened. He cared.
You know, you're doing a good job when you say, let your mind go and die.
Yeah.
And somebody
he
does.
He does. Well, I mean, that was for BroadwayCon. We had to just keep going.
The show
there
went
was
on.
There was no other option because we had thousands and thousands of people who'd paid thousands and thousands of dollars to be there.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing, too, I think, is there's a sense of responsibility because people have paid good money to see shows. I think it's all part of the conversation about, like, you know, people calling out sick and mm-hmm. people can return their tickets, you know, when
if someone above the title.
Right.
Yeah. Right. I just learned that, though.
Really?
I didn't know that if someone who's billed above the title isn't in, that you can get tickets for another day.
And now
I think I would never do that because I've seen understudies.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been an understudy, and sometimes they're even better.
Mm-hmm. I love seeing understudies because when I go, like, I cheer them on. Like, I love watching that sort of like freshness, and they're sort of like, what's going on? But now again, like with the internet, what happens is Cynthia Erivo calls out of Color Purple, and people
Everybody
on Twitter
knows.
Go crazy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
People tweet her going, "We traveled hundreds of miles to see you," and
they can be mean. There's a weird backlash.
And there's a weird pressure on actors mm-hmm. to the show must go on. Like, no matter how sick you are, no matter how hurt you are.
I know, and they're hurting their voices. Like, they'll do cortisone mm-hmm. and don't realize that they're literally, like, bursting blood vessels, but they can't feel them.
So I think it's a balance. I think audiences need to also be forgiving in that sense. Like, I'm sure you've seen people call out, like, halfway through shows, too, where, like, you know,
Cynthia, I saw Cynthia do that.
Well, there's one Elphaba in Act 1 and one Elphaba in Act 2.
Wait, Cynthia from The Color Purple.
In The Color Purple.
Was not in Act 2.
She did Act 1, and she was brilliant. She's a friend of mine, so, like, I did not see her sick. Like, she did not miss a note. She was brilliant. And then the lights dimmed, and ladies and gentlemen, for Act 2, the role of Celie will be played by
Robbie Roselle.
Obviously, I was off book.
He's always
but
there.
I wish I could remember her name. But
was it Brie?
Yes.
Brie.
She was Brie Jackson. Wonderful.
Yeah, she's amazing.
And instantly after the show, I tweeted out, because that's not an easy thing, and Cynthia just won the Tony, and, you know, I know that's not easy.
Shoes to fill.
And
the
arc of Celie in That Color Purple was so focused that for somebody else to step into it halfway through that journey, that's not easy. And she was mesmerizing. Yeah, you see great people when things like that happen.
Yeah.
Was there an understudy panel? Do you know if there was?
Oh, I don't.
I can look through this. But there definitely was last year. I know there was last year. But I love that. Love that there is this. And there's a Twitter account Shoshana runs, Broadway Understudies, mm-hmm. that tweets every time an understudy is going on for a lead role.
Awesome. Mm-hmm.
I think it's really exciting. I think it's hard. It's like you said, it's not easy to do.
But, you know, the audience feels like a proud parent. I feel like you have this collective experience when you know someone's going on for the first time or they're an understudy where you're all giving birth to this person at the same time. You want great things for them.
Oh, my gosh.
That is all you want.
I mean, Sutton Foster was an understudy.
Sure was.
She understudied Millie.
And nothing happened for her.
It's really
so sad.
Upsetting. I mean, every once in a while, an understudy goes on, and you get why they're an understudy. And Sutton Foster,
she's the one.
She's the one.
Isn't there a crazy story about not Bette Midler or like it's like one of those divas that like went on at the Winter Garden for maybe Barbara Streisand or something like that, and went on and played Hello Dolly or was I don't know what the story is, but
I don't know the story.
There
at
was.
All.
They ended up replacing whoever the lead was with the understudy.
And then suddenly that person is Bette Midler.
Yes.
Or whoever
exactly.
They are,
that's what it was. It was something
on.
Like that.
Yeah.
I remember the exact story. But that's a Sutton. That's kind of what happened with Sutton.
Yeah,
well, my understudy from Charlie Brown, Kristen Wyatt, has become
Wyatt was your understudy?
Yes,
oh my gosh.
Yes. And I saw her at BroadwayCon yesterday and she kept like running past me. Gotta do another panel on being amazing. Like doing another panel on being the most talented.
Yeah.
Being and I was like, okay,
bye.
You remember? Okay, bye.
That's so crazy.
Could I be on your cooking show on the web? I mean, I could help tie your apron.
There you go. Right. Yeah.
But there's a whole list of amazing understudies who went on. You know, I mean, she was Kristen in my understudy, and I am so proud of her. I hope the Tammy Faye Baker piece that she's been doing comes to New York because she'd be amazing in that.
I think what's so special about BroadwayCon is that the fans that are at BroadwayCon are the types of people that like love the understudies and appreciate the swings.
Yeah. Mm.
And because they're such maybe
Can
the
you
most
tell
important
my
part.
Listeners who may not know what a swing mm-hmm. is.
So a swing is a person who is in a cast who covers multiple tracks. Sometimes they're on stage every night, and a lot of times they're not, meaning they just are like hanging out backstage waiting for somebody, you know, to get hurt or something goes wrong. They get the call half an hour before the show that they're going on. But swings are people that typically cover, you know, 2, 4, 6. I mean, I have a friend in Newsies who covered like 12 tracks. There are people in Cats that cover like 7 tracks.
They have 7 roles in their head.
And these are full, and we're not talking like
just
one
dance,
song.
Right.
We're talking like full roles. Like you need to know where they enter, where they exit, what parts they sing in every, the harmonies. Like it's a very complicated thing to do. The binders that these swings have are just huge. It's remarkable work what swings
right.
do.
Mm-hmm.
They get paid even better than sometimes the lead actors,
right.
deservingly so.
Right, because they're doing 20 jobs.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and it's a really hard, I mean, I have a handful of friends that are swings, and it's I think, very important and admirable work.
Well, what I want to say is that what I felt in that room was hope. Mm-hmm. And
yeah. mm-hmm.
in the face of so many people right now feeling really scared, because the unknown can both be exciting and scary. And right now we're in this very strange limbo where we're just not sure what's rhetoric and what really is going to come to pass.
Yeah.
And, you know, Paula Vogel, who wrote this amazing play, How I Learned to Drive, among mm-hmm. among others, and she's a really important playwright, and she's just lovely to read. Her plays are just great to read, even if you don't get a chance to see them. She said at one point during Broadway Con, I believe theater is our best hope of resistance and resilience. And I really feel like, you know, it's jargon, right? It's
yeah.
words. But collectively, the spirit that was inside Broadway Con this weekend, all of us left with this feeling of community
yeah.
and family.
Mm-hmm.
We're not alone. Art heals
oh.
and spread the love and joy. And, you know, we've all seen it on T-shirts. It's almost become a bumper sticker slogan from Lin-Manuel Miranda's Tony acceptance speech, because it happened on the day of the Pulse Club massacre. Love is love is love is love is love. And it's true. And it's not an easy wound to heal right now, but the more we can just keep taking the message of listening to each other.
Oh, that's just
right.
Yes.
I can't change people's minds. I'm not going to be able to change people's minds. There are people that are just living in such a different reality. I don't know their history. I don't know what brought them to where they are, but we all feel desperate in different ways. And I think the message for me this weekend is not just resist and shout your truth, but listen to mm-hmm. each other. Mm-hmm. And the more we can just start listening to people who we feel come from such a different headspace,
yeah,
that's the only way we're going to be able to do it, to understand with compassion.
I think what theater is at its core, it's empathy. First of all, the actors have to be able to step into someone else's shoes and live their experience.
Right.
Obviously, you can bring yourself to whatever you're
right,
doing.
But sometimes it's completely unlike your own experience.
Right, and you have to be able to really wash away what you know and understand the background of this person, the history of this person, and see the world the way that they see it. Audiences do the same thing, where you go in a theater and you escape for 2.5 hours, 3 hours, 90 minutes, whatever, and you are completely engulfed in someone else's experience.
And then transformed.
Mm-hmm. And exactly. And that is, to me, I think empathy is like the key to world peace. I think the ability for us to be able to go, like what you said, like, I don't know someone else's history. Mm-hmm. I don't know someone else. And just taking the time to know that and making the effort to try, instead of shutting someone down or building the wall and creating separation,
right.
listening and saying, you know what? I don't agree with you. I don't necessarily believe the same things you do, but I want to know why. I want to understand
yeah.
I want to see the world from the way you see it
yeah.
so that we can have an open discussion
yeah.
and we can have a conversation about
it. And that's what theater is.
And that's what theater is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I really want to, I mean, I hope we can keep talking, because it's so interesting to me. Mm. My takeaway, you know, actors have a reputation for being incredibly self-involved. And incredibly narcissistic.
Yes.
Lots of professions have those kinds
yeah.
of commentary
yeah.
about them. But it was unbelievable to me to see this weekend the opposite of that. Such generosity mm-hmm. and love mm-hmm. and community. And the spirit was overwhelming of togetherness. And I was so lucky to be there. I highly recommend people going online and looking. You know, you can see video from it. You can read blogs about it. So many people have been posting and sharing their experiences. And if you can come next year, it's really worth it. Yeah, it's really amazing.
Absolutely. Oh, I think it's totally worth it. Especially go on Twitter and see what people are saying and what they're tweeting. Because these are real people. Again, like, this is unfiltered. Like, these are people tweeting real things from
their
own phones.
There. Yeah.
And you can see how impassioned and emotional people were about this weekend, because it is, it's just so, it's so special.
Beautiful.
It's so special.
I know.
How beautiful to watch parents, fathers taking their children around, you know, to take, walking these beautiful nerds through this beautiful thing. It was really, that was very
moving. I love the new hashtag Theater Nerds Unite. I'm like, yeah, we will. Mm-hmm. So before we go, I don't know if you have a little known fact about yourself that you can share with me.
I, in fourth grade, performed in a talent show, We Are the World, by myself, a cappella, with a Sharpie t-shirt that said USA for Africa and headphones that connected to nothing. You're welcome.
Wow.
You're welcome, America.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm trying to think of something little known.
Matt. I know, because you're a big sharer.
I am. I'm very. I am. I tell people I'm an open book. I'm very open and honest. Well, something that maybe a lot of people don't know about me right now is that I'm a vegan.
Oh.
And I think.
Your skin looks amazing.
Thank you so much. I also am wearing makeup right now because I had a video shoot this morning, so I'm in full B right now.
Is it vegan makeup?
I hope so.
Okay.
I certainly hope so.
All right. Well, I'm going to end our interview with a quote from Melissa, who is one of the co-founders with Anthony Rapp of Broadway Con, and that'll take us out. And I want to thank you both for being here.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For being exactly who you are, the time that you spent around people who understand and agree that joy can be resistance, that art can be power, and that love is always, always, always the answer. Please remember those times and please use it. Use it to take what happened in this bubble out into the world, because if we don't share what we felt this weekend, we could lose it.
Clouds can make the wind blow. Bugs can make the grass grow. So, there you go. These are little known facts that count. You know.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. If you want more information about my guests, go to the website littleknownfactspodcast.com. I also wanted to tell you that there is now a new addition to the website. It is a button that says Contributions. This podcast is a true labor of love, and I really, really want to keep doing it for a long time. So if you like listening as much as I love to do it, please feel free to contribute. It would mean the world to me. Also, on Twitter, you can find me at Alana Levine. Instagram is Little Known Facts Podcast. And on Facebook, Little Known Facts Podcast. You can also feel free to rate and review the show on the iTunes show page. This podcast is recorded at Hangar Studios in New York City. This episode was brought to you by Pro Media. Located in Times Square, Pro Media offers both production and post-production services out of its beautiful studios in the heart of New York City. Pro Media, sound vision. Find out more at promedia.nyc.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.